Good evening. Welcome to the December 1st Harbor Advisory Board meeting. And first item on the agenda is the roll call. And let the record show that Mandy Davis is the only absentee. I'm assuming that she is excused, but then, as Rick pointed out last time, there are no excused absences, so I don't know what's going on. In any case, the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. You all had a chance to take a look at the minutes. Are there any corrections, additions, deletions, etc.?
I'd move for approval of the minutes.
Second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Board wishing to do that.
Yes, Don, I would like to just ask a question, probably of Rick Algert here, but I read in the in this last week's Sun Bulletin that the pump-out station at Tidelands Park had been locked and that it was now accessible by keys only and only by those who are liveaboards?
Everything was right up to that end. We repaired put a new pump engine in the vessel pump out at the Tidelands Park side tide dock, and within 2 or 3 days, unfortunately, somebody had misused it and it was inoperable again. So we got that cleared up, and we made the decision that we went back to where we actually had originally first intended to use it by supervised use only. So people that would like to use the side tide dock vessel pump out should give the Harbor Patrol a call on either our office phone 772-6254 or channel 12, and you'll have to make arrangements at this time so that we can unlock it and supervise the use. I don't think that that's going to discourage use, and we do feel that it will certainly help us with maintenance of the facility. Something's going on there, and you know, it's spending a lot of downtime. It's very difficult, and when people put things in it, apparently intentionally at this time, that it just can't handle. So anyway, it's not just for liveaboards. It's for any boater.
Are there other publicly accessible pump outs other than that one, the one at there and the one at the yacht club?
Yeah, there's one at the south. I have to say at this point how much I appreciate the yacht club's putting in the pump out, and that has been the one that's been saving us here. And I very much appreciate the yacht club's work, and I know that it's not all that easy to keep those things running and to operate them. So that's been a lifesaver. At this time, those are the pump outs that we have.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
I think it's not always noted that the yacht club is way more than a social club, that there are a lot of services that many people in the public don't realize they offer, and I've had through the years many customers who were passing through, boaters who were given accommodations they said were much friendlier and of a better quality than they received up and down the coast. So Don, if you could carry that message back to the yacht club, I think that would be it'd be a good message.
Thank you. I'll do that.
But I'd like to jump in there too and say the same thing. You know, and Jim Phillips also came and met with us when we had a few communication issues, and Jim is being very accessible to us, and we just really appreciate the services you provide. I often hear from boaters that say what a wonderful club it is, how many services they appreciate. You are the official host for the transient vessels for Morro Bay, and I think you do a great job.
Well, maybe what we ought to do is give our thanks to the new Commodore of the Morro Bay Yacht Club for next year. Jim?
Which would be Jim Phillips.
Thanks.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Don?
Go ahead.
Rick, did you allude that it may have been intended?
Anybody wanted to push the button and make it run. And so, you know, sometime during an unsupervised period, somebody misused it. So now that we've changed the operations again.
Additional comments?
I have a question about something that's not on the agenda. When was that meeting supposed to be with the fish and game on that back bay issues?
Yeah, there was on the illegal moorings, there was a meeting on November 15th at the National Estuary Program. Are you thinking of another one coming?
No, that one, did that, resolve anything at all?
Maybe I'll ask Sue to. I was there, but she...
I don't know that it necessarily resolved anything. It clarified some more of the issues. A lot of the boaters came to that meeting as they had to the first one, and Fish and Game did make it very clear that they intended to move forward with eliminating the moorings and the vessels from that area if they were still there after December 31st. They did discuss more in detail how people could apply for an extension, which they do have to do in writing, and they have to have that in, I think it was by December 15th at the latest, in order to get that extension, and that would be a three-month extension only. They also had responded, and that's in with our newsletter, this extra material. Fish and Game had responded to the mayor's letter requesting that they maybe allow temporary mooring for longer time back there with help from us in supervising it by saying they are not interested in having a mooring area in their wildlife area. They made that statement pretty clear. So I don't know that it resolved all the issues, but I think it did clarify what's going on, and people are actively looking for places.
The vice chair of this, is that correct? Because I may have to turn it over to him. My voice may just decide not to continue. So anyhow, but I'll carry on as much as I can. Action items.
Just make it a short meeting, Don.
There is that. Item four, the action items, update on the Marine Life Protection Act process, and I'm going to let Rick do the introductions on that.
Thank you, Chairman Lockwood, and I'm going to introduce Kirk Sturm, who is retired not too long ago from State Parks Department after being the superintendent up at Hearst Castle and then moving up to Sacramento and working directly for the State Director of Parks. He has entered private life, and we were able to, at our recommendation actually, he was able to get employed by this Marine Life Protection Act initiative process that we've all been going through for the last, well, Eric and myself, and you're going to hear about it right now, for the last 6-7 months. So, Kirk, if you could stand up to the podium maybe and take over, that'd be great.
Good evening. I'm Kirk Sturm with the Marine Life Protection Act, and I retired April 1st, and a couple weeks later I got a phone call from this group and said a gentleman by the name of Rick Algert suggested that they hire me, and I didn't even know who they were and what was going on. But anyway, it's been a wonderful relationship. My role is community outreach. I have a couple of responsibilities. First, I pass communications. When there seems to be a rocky point, I help out with information back and forth. And otherwise, I'm kind of the glue behind the scenes. I live in the Los Osos area, and most of my time is spent in the Morro Bay and Port San Luis area. You have in front of you a 2-page paper that I produced, Marine Life Protection Act. The stakeholders asked me to go out and make contact with the cities in the study area, which I did. Our goal with that was to conduct a community profile, and I was charged with gathering public planning documents in support of commercial fishing, recreational fishing, or any other kind of ocean land interface activities. And I put together a binder, and what that binder does is it represents a proxy on how important those activities are to a local entity without measuring it directly. For example, Rick was able to provide a number, 25 or 30 council resolutions in support of fishing. Also, Rick was able to provide some grants that the city applied for in support of commercial fishing. So we use that as a proxy that commercial fishing, recreational fishing was important to the city of Morro Bay. That's an example of that. So this talks about what the initiative is. It got established in 1999, directed Fish and Game to conduct this survey and implement marine life protection, marine protected areas. Also, it's a pretty broad-based group of people, of commercial people, recreational fisher people, conservationists, and people off the street. At the time this was done, what we had accomplished at that point was the stakeholders had negotiated and adopted a set of goals and objectives. The stakeholders had adopted a regional profile. They had done some data mapping. There's 100 maps that are in a computer base, and you can click on them and add them together, and you could spend a lot of time on that trying to figure out different things to think about. But there's 100 databases or more, and that's through UCSB. And then at the time, they were doing evaluation of the existing MPAs. Currently, so an update from this handout is that the stakeholders made suggested MPA areas, and there's about 130 of those. And there are different sizes, and there's different zonings that can happen in each of them. Out of the 130, then, the stakeholders, again, said, which ones of those are we going to put together to create a suite or a package? And there's currently about 6 suites of MPA packages. There's 3 that were generated internally by the stakeholders, and there's 3 that came in from the outside that met the deadlines and met the criteria. Everything is reviewed by a scientific advisory board. The stakeholders themselves can make further modifications to their packages. In mid-December, there's going to be a snapshot in time where things are frozen to look at what is the initiative, what do the meetings look like for the stakeholders and the Blue Ribbon Task Force, who's on the scientific advisory team, who are the Central Coast project people. There's a place where we solicit public input. Pretty near most, if not all, of the documents affiliated with this are publicly displayed on this website, and there's a page for that, including the maps, the regional profile. You can look at the existing MPAs, and then there's contact information, and then there's news releases. Public comment can continue. Next week is the last stakeholder meeting up in the Monterey area. But after next week, there's the Blue Ribbon Task Force that's going to meet once or twice more. There's the Department of Fish and Game, who has to look at these suites of proposals and look at them from an operational point of view and a policy point of view. But that's another opportunity for public comment. There's the Fish and Game Commission that has to actually approve these. And again, that's another opportunity for public comment. And then during implementation, there's going to be public comment. And finally, the Marine Life Protection Act has, as part of its operational guidelines, this concept called adaptive management. Part of the challenges of the existing MPAs is they were done with no goals and there's no review. Are they doing well? How are we measuring that? If they're doing well, do we need to make them smaller? If they're not doing well, do we need to make them bigger, et cetera? And those are just examples. I'm not saying that is going to happen. Information and feedback from her, which I rolled forward into my report. And process-wise, the stakeholders have accomplished a lot. There's been a lot of discussions on the table. It's not like I think there's been good dialogues back and forth. It's been a real challenge for the stakeholders. They're making a lot of progress, and next week is their final meeting, and I think they're going to be put together some good packages, some good suites to move on. So that's it in a nutshell in terms of what the MLPA is, the current status of where the stakeholders are, and the third step in terms of what is in the future for public comment and for the process. What questions may I answer?
Well, I'll pass the word down to the dean first if you have questions.
Yes, I do, Kurt. It appears on the map that we received this evening that there are 3 levels, I'm assuming 3 levels of study regions. Is that correct?
Do you want to get into those maps, or do you want me to try? Because that was something I hit Kirk with tonight that I gave you out the maps.
There's generally 3 areas. Uh-huh.
three kinds of areas. Is that correct?
There's zoning, right. and that's my term because it's easy to understand. There's three types of zoning, yes.
Could I get you to elaborate on the three types?
And yes.
They're restricted.
There's a state conservation area, which is the broadest in terms of what activities may occur. There's a state recreational guidelines restrict activities. But in terms of the legal definition, it's the broadest in terms of operations.
Okay, the next category.
Is a state marine reserve.
That's on the bottom, okay.
Right.
And that's the mid.
That's probably pretty restrictive, actually. And then the third one is a state marine park.
Can you explain to me the levels of the restrictedness? If you say that's SMR is the most restrictive, but I don't know what that means. Can a surfer walk across the beach to go surfing? Or
yes.
Is it totally.
Let me try and then
go
you
ahead.
Can, and you know, I hope you ask a lot of questions. I just want to make sure that I know. This is so complex. There is so much to it. There was a law passed in 1999, a couple of failed tries, a lot of history I can cover here. You're welcome if you want to ask questions about that, because I think a lot of that's important. Now, we're in a process here that was funded by the Resource Legacy Foundation Fund last year, really announced at the Fish and Game Commission meeting in Morro Bay. Many of you may remember that. With $7 million to jumpstart the process again, and I think $1 million approximately in state funds that came from Thailand's revenues. And that has got this process going, got the ground up, or the bottom up regional stakeholders group activated again, this staff that Kirk is part of, and it's quite extensive at this board. There's a lot of support. There's a whole science advisory team that is made up of very qualified, very cannot allow commercial activity. My understanding. So if a state marine park would typically be a sport fishing park, for example, or something like that. If you're going to allow any commercial activity in that area, you can't call it a state marine park. So that's a distinction there. Then the state marine reserve is typically only if it is highly restrictive. And we're currently in a dialogue discussion with that's going to be very important in this process, whether we can allow things like salmon fishing or, let's say, coastal pelagics, especially troll coastal pelagics, which have no disturbance of the bottom. These are highly mobile fish, so they don't, you know, taking these fish out of this area would not have any impact on the local ecosystem. And we feel like, for example, you should be able to allow salmon fishing in these areas and call it a reserve. So far, we haven't won that battle, and they're calling them highly restricted conservation areas. So there's shades of this whole thing. Now, to get to your question, you're probably asking, where your really interest was, I would guess, is whether there's no contact or a potential areas that people could not swim in. And I think that is a possibility, that some of these areas potentially could be suggested to made no water contact. And indeed, there is a reserve, that one of the few marine protected areas that really is a truly very strict marine protected area is the one that exists up by Big Creek, and that was put into place by special legislation in 1992 or 3, sometime around that area. That is, I believe, a no-contact area.
Correct.
No swimming, no nothing. So that can be done. In our proposal, and which I'm going to talk about later, the maps, and that's the CFC proposal, which is proposal one in the maps.
It's a darn good question. Typically, you'd think they would stop at mean high tide. I mean, that's the easy conceptual place where they would stop. However, I do know that Elkhorn Slough is a marine protected area, and I do know that there's a proposal on the table in this package that you could put a marine protected area, for example, in the bay or in parts of the bay. Now, how far inland do they go? I can't answer that. I don't have the specific knowledge. I think common sense says there's got to be some sort of water because it's the Marine Protected Act. I don't think you could go onto land or up mountains or something like that. I'm sorry, I don't have an exact definition of what the eastern boundary would be.
If I can try something there too, is I think a lot of these questions, this is a process that is sort of having to be determined as things go. So, and it oftentimes, if you talk to one of the conservation-oriented people, they feel like, you know, the broadest application should be the one that's accepted. And many people like myself feel that perhaps we should take this very incrementally, and that seems to be where I'm usually trying to go. So, and one other thing, a hint I might give you in answering that question, which for you, if you're a process dweeb, I think to keep in mind, and this may help with some future questions too, is that the process here, the procedure, the administrative procedure to keep in mind is that this is going to go through the Blue Ribbon Task Force to the Department of Fish and Game, and ultimately these will be enacted through the Fish and Game Commission by amendments to the Fish and Game Code, so that we can see that they will, you know, that's the administrative part.
Two representatives from the public at large, and there's nothing that prevents any of those people from going to the website and posting any comments which are read. And secondly, nothing that prevents anybody from contacting, for example, Rick, who's a stakeholder, and providing input that way.
Okay, I'll pass my questions on.
Go ahead, Jim.
I have no questions.
I may be the only person that doesn't know what a coastal pelagic is, but I'm going to ask, is that a surface fish like salmon that's passing through? Or
salmon, albacore, yeah.
Okay.
Or it's actually maybe albacore pelagic.
Okay, so what you're hoping for is that they will allow that type of fishing in the area, but it's still up in the air?
That would be our, you know, I'll go ahead and give you my pitch. Something I've been advocating quite a bit lately is that salmon fishing right now is, of course, is sort of the backbone of our harbors. Especially many of our fishermen here fish salmon, but they often don't land in this area. With the Klamath, the protection of the Klamath endangered species designation, the protection of the need to protect those fish because of water issues, essentially, in the Klamath, which has resulted in low, I want to get this right, it's not recruitment, but returnees. Anyway, the PFMC has said last year, and for probably the next 2 years, salmon fishing in the most productive time for commercial fishermen in May and June is all going to be south of Point Sur. So that's very, very, that's a very important fishery for us. We're in the most productive times of the year, it has to be south of Point Sur, which is about roughly halfway between here and Monterey. So we need to, there is no need to call it a reserve. And there are requirements. The science advisory team is you know, their guidance to us, but they're very, you know, they're very adamant that they need spacing and certain amounts of reserves, and we're trying to meet those, and it's quite difficult. Did that help?
It does. I'm you know, reminded of the comments I heard from Harbor Director up at Pigeon Point several years ago, where there was a, after the drought years and big recoveries in the population, there were banned areas up there. No fishing was allowed, and yet, you know, salmon don't live forever like some fish that just keep going on, and all these fish were if they weren't caught, they were going to perish anyway, because you don't need, you know, I mean, it doesn't take huge numbers for the populations to go up and spawn and yeah, keep the populations alive.
Absolutely, and if Ed wouldn't say this, I should add for the public at least, is that salmon in the ocean are probably better. The population is clearly in recovery. It's a very healthy fishery, very sustainable fishery. It's probably been, there's been more salmon last year than there was in 20 years. And so that's not the problem. The problem is this specific fish that they make sure that to avoid taking any Klamath fish, the fishery gets pushed south of Point Sur. So I don't want to leave people the impression that there's a problem with salmon populations. There's not, only with this one specific fish that's causing these regulations. And like everything else on this, is very, very, very complex, and oftentimes these regulations force us into what might be otherwise illogical decisions, and that's what we're trying to work on with this particular issue.
And that's part of the challenges for the stakeholders, is if a hypothetical yet balance the socioeconomics.
And I think it's important that those discussions are taking place, because you know, if there's good science involved, the fishermen are going to buy into it a lot more than the situation I just described up at Pigeon Point, where there was, you know, no fishing allowed, and yet all these fish are literally going to perish. that doesn't make sense, and it's certainly affecting incomes. And if they're looking at it with their eyes open and they're taking those things into account, I'm more comfortable, but I'm going to wait and see.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Eddie?
Well, I don't have any specific questions because most of our association has been working with the groups with Rick, and they pretty much know what's going on. But I am concerned about some of the small guys that fish for live fish. Some of them aren't involved with the association all that much, and they know this process is going on, but a lot of them I don't think know how bad it's going to affect them in certain areas. And just for the record, if any live fish fishermen with small boats and kayaks and stuff, they better get a hold of Tom Hafer to find out what's going on if they haven't already, because he's one of our members on the stakeholders group. And that's the only thing I'd want to say about it. We're pretty much up to date on the rest of it. I don't agree with much of any of it, to tell you the truth, but that's the way it is. And another thing that you might know, I heard today that there was a group of sports fishermen that did file suit.
Last week.
On the process.
You're correct on that.
That's about all I have to say. Thanks.
Just a couple background questions. You'd mentioned that this is the third attempt at it. What happened with attempt 1 and 2, and why did they fail, and what was involved? What was the process at that time?
You know, I think they failed because they did not solicit from the beginning the input from the stakeholders, from the commercial fishermen. They were internal activities, and then once they went out on a draft, there were so many comments that were negative, they just never made it out of the draft stage.
And that happened twice?
That happened twice.
Pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
So this is the third time where the stakeholders are driving the process.
And I was personally involved in it pretty much right from the start, too, because some of you may remember even about 2000, the original law passed required this, set up the science advisory team actually in the law, and the science advisory team issued a proposed network of new marine protected areas. The Fish and Game Department, I believe in 2000, it may have been 2001, but I believe it was 2000, set up a number of public hearings. One was here in Morro Bay. That proposal from the science advisory team was quite extensive, would have eliminated a lot of access and fishing grounds, and had significant, in my opinion, effect on coastal communities, and it was not supported by the public. Very, very full rooms in every hearing. I don't know, Eddie, if you attended, but it was very, very, 90% opposition. Of course, you know, that doesn't necessarily reflect the overall population, but the Fish and Game Department, and they got about 6 months or 9 months into that before the state budget crisis and a couple of other issues, but mostly state budget crisis, they simply did not have the funds. They were laying off wardens, so they said, we can't continue this. So that was really a funding thing with the second one. Now, one of the interesting notes with this process here is that this, one of the first decisions that the MLPA initiative staff and the Blue Ribbon Task Force made was, where would be the first area to study and try to set up this new and improved set network of MPAs? And they chose this area here that we live in, from Point Conception up to Half Moon Bay. So there will be future rounds of this with different stakeholders, I hope. And this is the first test area. Now there has been a quite a controversial marine protected area process down in Channel Islands, sort of a different, very similar issues, but different sort of process. But this is the statewide MLPA process that we're in here in the first one.
And it was also mentioned about no contact area, and that there's Big Creek you had mentioned. What kind of reasons would you have a no contact area, and what specifically was Big Creek about?
I don't. Do you know the history on?
A little bit. I think the perception was that there's many. I should watch myself here, but. I think that the folks who put in Big Creek represented probably the purist in the science group that would prefer to have absolutely no human activity involved in some of these areas. And that was a test area up there. And I will add, one of the interesting things with that, and I hope I better watch my words carefully again, is that there has not been much money to monitor or to do research up there. Unfortunately, there wasn't any real baseline of Big Creek. Big Creek's in a very isolated area on Big Sur Coast. And they did surveys roughly and shortly after it was created, and then a survey, I believe, in the late 1990s. And they have really not enough information to assess the value of that particular MPA. But by most, and the report, I believe, did say that it apparently really didn't have any impact creating that MPA. And the question is why. Many of us believe the question, the why, is because there's so little fishing pressure that it just doesn't matter. That, you know, you're prohibiting fishing, and these things really work only, and this, I think there is clear agreement on this, they work best where there's high fishing pressure. They would work best in San Diego, but San Diego has a lot of political clout and a lot of fishermen, so they didn't want to go there. So anyway,
exactly.
So anyway, the MPA up at Big Creek apparently has not had much impact in increasing populations or a number of the other issues they hope to achieve. So the conclusions are they don't have enough information to conclude why, but they do speculate that it could be that it's just lack of fishing pressure, or it could be that it's not big enough, or other reasons.
Okay, so with that being the extreme, the no-contact area, other measures would be different types of restrictions on access to the areas, either by commercial or recreational vessels and commercial use or fishing, either commercially or recreationally.
In our proposal, at least, just as a caveat.
Yeah, I'd like to give one opinion about something. There's been a common statement that this process is being driven by the stakeholders group, as if they asked for this. And the law was passed, like you said, in the 90s. But most of the stakeholders that I know, with exception of a few dyed-in-the-wool environmentalists and a few diving outfits, would not go through this process at all if it wasn't there by law. And so I would say what's really driving this process is the money from the Legacy Resource Foundation, because this would not go on if they hadn't put the money up. And then I'm not sure about how the guidance of this particular setup would have been without their input into the administration about how this process was going to go on. And I'm just as skeptical as that sport fisherman group that is suing, to tell you the truth. And I'm not sure that this is going to solve much of anything. If nothing else, the environmentalists like to state the precautionary rule when they're dealing with new fisheries and new gear. This is no different. There should be a precautionary rule when they go about this process, because when you close off certain areas to fishermen, they're all going to be crowded in another area, and that's going to have another effect. And plus, without any baseline data, I think even the smallest of these plans, even the least problematic of these plans, still they have no idea what the outcome is going to be, number one. Number two, I just read, just incensed me, I read that sea lions, 27% of their population are small rockfish, which is one of the main species they're trying to save, and they won't do anything about that overblown population. So,
is no longer run by the Coast Guard. It's now State Land Commission, is that
BLM.
BLM, okay. And what is the public accessibility to the beach there and the property now that it's Bureau of Land Management?
I don't think that that's been sorted out yet. I think they're in a pretty slow process.
Right.
They have some limitations. For example, water and restrooms are a limitation, and the road out is a limitation. The thought is, since the property adjacent to that went to the state parks, that they'll be working to, you know, develop something out there. I know they're doing remodeling in anticipation of public access and infrastructure in anticipation of the public access. But I think I can't speak for BLM, but I think it's far off in terms of their planning process and ability to deliver the infrastructure.
I know that if you want to take a tour, they're very limited, and you have to schedule it way ahead, but you can get a tour of the lighthouse.
Right.
If I want to go walk on the beach there tomorrow, may I do that, or is it still restricted to the point where you can't even get down there?
I don't have that detail.
Because BLM land is usually, you think, a little more accessible. Okay. I just thought maybe since this was in the area of study, you might have run across that information. Thank you.
Rick, are you... You look like you're musing something.
Well, yeah, I don't really know. That, you know, the area south of there, of course, is the elephant seal rookery. The state has restricted access to much of that portion to protect.
Gene, you had something else? Oh, Jim.
I was looking at the maps that were handed out to us, and my question is the areas that are indicated. Is one part of my question, and the restrictions within each area would be the other part of that. Have either of those two parts been finalized in any way?
No.
So even the location of those areas and their size has still not been finalized?
Correct.
And they're still subject to change?
Correct. There's three suites that are being advanced. Yes.
Thank you.
Three Gene? Suites through the regional stakeholders group, and there are three outside and one sort of quasi. But the maps that I provided you tonight are the three suites that are going to be considered at the regional stakeholders group next week in Monterey. And I anticipate that they will ultimately, the regional stakeholders group will be asked to indicate a preference. The 30 or so members will be asked to indicate a preference as to which of these networks they would indicate as their preferred network to go to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. Mm-hmm. And I guess if we're going to talk about the maps, I just would, you know, it's a little hard, I realize, but on the second page is the southern areas, and you may want to look at the Morro Bay area because there are additional protections for the Morro Bay area.
I'm going to look at that. Gene, did you have something?
Well, yes, following up on this, is it possible to put these three, we have in front of us three different packages, to discuss closures or for our particular area, it shows the Morro Bay itself, the interior of the harbor here, under your broadest SMCA category, same as the Tascadero Beach area and the Morro Beach area. That's package number one.
Right, and Rick, remind me, package number one is the Fishers? Okay.
In package number two, it appears that you've got the entrance to the harbor, a good part of Morro Bay, say the fishing game area that we see right now, under the SMCA, which is the broadest study area. The area from, say, Baywood Point South, that area is the most restricted area. Also from the area from, say, the State Park Marina with a line drawn due south towards the east, that's the most restricted area, as well as the Morro Bay sand spit area, as well as Point Vachon. And then your third package is presented to us, shows the Morro Bay interior of the harbor as the SMCA. And then just the southern part of our Morro Bay and the easterly part of Morro Bay as the most restrictive. My question is, in any other process, any other permitting process, any other development process, areas need to be posted and signed. Are any of these areas proposed to be posted or signed?
To educate people where they are.
Is that before these are established or after they are established?
After they're established.
I see.
Okay. One of the guidelines that the stakeholders used in drawing lines was trying to use either a Latin lawn to make it easy or a mountain, for example, to make it easy. That was one of the criticisms of previous MPAs, as they were kind of arbitrary, and it would be better if we arbitrarily moved it, say, for example, down to this door so we would know where it is. There will be some sort of signs. I don't know exactly what boundaries are going to be marked or how it's going to be done exactly. That'll be implementation phase.
Okay, and then my last comment is, are there any proposals for more no-contact areas?
I'll try that because you
okay.
Oh, you want to try? Well, I mean, I believe that part of the problem here, Gene, is that I can't tell you how this is all going to end up. I mean, I wish I could see, but we've got a long way to go. As the proposals that are in play now, I believe Big Creek is the only area that is currently no contact, and at least in the proposal that I've been working on, the CFC proposal number one, I believe it is proposed to be continued to be no contact.
I'd like to jump in here about this time. Everybody else has had a chance. I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing that you have the conservation area and you have the reserved area, and that takes care of all of Morro Bay. And
step in there, and then you can maybe make it easier for you. I believe that for Morro Bay, proposals 2 and 3 are very similar. And at the regional stakeholders group a month ago, there was a proposal to include also, or at least a desire on some of the regional stakeholders' part, to include areas that would be limited or no boating to protect wildfowl. I cannot tell you if those ideas have gone forward from looking at the maps right now. I don't think they are necessarily still in these proposals 2 and 3. What you're really looking at is on proposals 2 and 3, I believe, are the idea that, I mean, again, here, the administrative process is fish and game, so they clearly do have the at least the capability to regulate waterfowl and possibly even some boating, but that would be questionable, but, you know, through their wildlife protection authority. But I think what you're looking at with 2 and 3 are the ideas that the South Bay area shown and the very back Bay area shown as reserves would be no recreational fishing, no commercial fishing, no take of any consumptive items of any kind. Now, what we have proposed in our CFC proposal number one is a conservation area, and the change would essentially be that commercial fishing would no longer be allowed in any way in the harbor. And some people have laughed at me because I'm proposing that because they think there isn't much commercial fishing in the harbor. And indeed, right now there isn't much. We have occasionally had, most of you are aware, occasionally had some commercial activity. And historically, there's actually more than I realized commercial activity in the harbor. And that would no longer be prohibited with the exception of the existing mariculture leases to propose just for Morro Bay. These reserve areas that are proposed in 2 and 3, I think the big distinction at this point, and it's hard to tell how all this will fall out, is that they would not allow recreational fishing, certainly. I do not know if they can even regulate boating at this time or how that would be done, if that is even part of those proposals. How'd I do?
I heard a statement in there, something to the effect that to protect the waterfowl as well. And I have this real sneaky feeling that somebody's using a backdoor approach to accomplish something that they couldn't accomplish with the fish and game, and that was to restrict or prohibit hunting. Now, I'm not a hunter, and I don't really want to fight too badly for that, but it looks to me like this may be a backdoor approach, and it's the idea that it possibly can impact the kayakers and canoers and the rest of the people that like to use the bay. I mean, the snowy plovers have kept us off of the sand spit, and now they want to keep us off of the bay. You know, I'm getting really unhappy about all this sort of stuff.
Earlier in the week, one of the stakeholders asked for a definition of a marine organism, and I was the one that was asked to broadcast an email, which I sent Rick a copy of. Waterfowl are not a marine organism within the Act. Therefore, an MPA cannot restrict hunting, even if it was a reserve. And I sent Rick a copy of that. That is a valid concern. That is a valid thought.
My problem here is that, you know, if we're concerned about marine organisms and they're in the back bay, and it's sort of like if we restrict boating, we're going to help out the marine organisms. I mean, I've been a diver. a scuba diver. There's been a number of people on this panel that are scuba divers. You know, I've been underwater and watched a boat go over top, and it doesn't bug the fish at all. And it certainly doesn't bug the abalone, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but it's the idea that we can restrict boating and that will help the marine organisms is a fallacy. What it is the fact that the hunters need boats to get back bay to get to their hunting areas. And that's the way to get rid of them.
Right.
And to me, that's a backdoor approach, and it's a sneaky approach, and I don't like it.
Then you're for proposal number one, then, which is a conservation area for Morro Bay.
I could go with number one, provided that they didn't tell us, you know, that you can't enjoy the bay anymore.
Right.
That it's now sort of a sacred place that only.
Rick, at least one member of the advisory committee supports your proposal.
Yeah, I get a sense it's sort of like most people I talk to is they really don't think I'm very. It's not much support. It's shallow support. It's better than a sharp stick in the eye, I guess.
I have a question though. These proposals here, they're often mistaken.
Two. And Rick, do you remember who the third one is?
I think NRDC.
NRDC.
Uh-huh. One of the proposals was essentially a reserve on 90% of the coast.
National Resources Defense Council.
Could you repeat that again?
I said one of those proposals was essentially a reserve on 90% of the coast, is my memory. So those are pretty. There's quite a bit of variation, let's say, in those outside proposals.
Only 90?
Okay. Guys, first of all, let me ask if there are any more questions, because what I want to do is I heard Rick say that he gets shallow support, and I'd like to see if everybody or if the rest of the board actually supports something less restrictive than these package 2 and 3. In any case, do you have any questions, Rick?
Well, I'm not completely sure I know exactly the full level of what the restrictions are on any of these proposals. Mm. So before I would say, yeah, I like one proposal over the other, I'm not clear enough. I don't think we've been given enough information as to all of the implications of what these proposals, you know, what any of the proposals are. You know, we asked before about the no contact, and they said, oh, no, there's not going to be any of those, but do we have a list of what all of the different types of restrictions are? It's unclear as to the level of organisms, whether it's boat.
I certainly do.
With the amount of information that I've been presented.
I would say that the less restrictive, if it's really hard to get people to back off of these things once they're in place, I would rather take a softer approach. You can always increase the level of restriction. You're going to have a much harder time decreasing the level of restriction. And, you know, if I had to say I like one of these better than another, it would be package number one, I guess. But, you know, it's just the frustration of things like Pigeon Point, you know, that I was talking about earlier, where fish populations come back and yet they're just swimming around out there and nobody can take them and they're gonna perish.
I think what Rick really needs is, you know, I would go for the least restrictive one here. If there was one that comes up that's less restrictive than any of these, I would certainly go for that. But it looks to me like the Fish and Game Commission is going to take the weight of the stakeholders group more than any individual group that's going to be putting their BS, what do I call it, before the commission. So basically, I know the groups have been working on these, and number one's the least restrictive, and it fits us the best. And so I'm fine with that if that's what we have to do. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of fishermen and representatives going before the commission, even with this up there, to try to get some of that change to be least restrictive, because it's and for some fishermen, it's going to be hurting them pretty good. most of us that, you know, that used to fish and fish deeper waters and different species, that's one thing. But the inshore guys are going to get, if something else comes up, that's fine.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
I think I need to ask my question, part of my question over again. The three packages that we have here, one of the three packages will be acted upon, but within each package, the area is indicated as SMCA, SMP, SMR. The size of those areas and their location will not change within those packages.
No, they could change.
They could change.
I'm in the process of probably submitting some changes for the CFC proposal right now. Based on yesterday's meeting at the Blue Ribbon Task Force and input we've received from one of the big directions was to the Blue Ribbon Task Force would desires us in the Fishermen's and Harbor Group, the CFC group, it's called the California Fisheries Coalition, to try to get areas of common interest and get input from conservation-oriented people and to make adjustments and to listen carefully to the advice from the science advisory team. And we are sincerely trying to do that. And we are going to submit some additional changes. For example, I think we're going to probably change the Morro Bay conservation area now. The regulations for most of it was very similar to what it was just protecting clams and worms, and we'll change that all to an intertidal or a no invertebrates protection area, for example, the one at Atascadero Beach. And we're sort of it's close to fine-tuning at this point, because the alternative number one shown here is the only one that balances and balances best, and the only one that balances socioeconomic needs, interests of coastal communities, and the advice from the science advisory team.
Since this is still in flux, then, I'm of the opinion that that I would like to or would support the least restrictive as far as the plan is concerned. But I, too, am apprehensive about supporting a plan or a proposal at this time simply because I don't know, and it can't be known, what all of the implications would be. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'd like to offer a comment quickly on that. If you know, the best thing that happens tonight, I hope, is that we raise the profile one more time on this process. I know some of you may have seen it on TV and there's been a little bit of press, but here the public is seeing at this stage what's going on. We're having a chance to answer your questions, and I know your interest is piqued, and this is good because this is very important stuff. It's been a huge amount of work. And there's a long way to go still, and there'll be a lot more input required. And these are matters of great interest to folks, and they need to pay attention. And the website is listed here. It's an excellent resource for all the information you could ever want on this. I encourage you to do that. Give us feedback. Give the feedback through the MLPA, those of us on the Regional Stakeholders Group. Hopefully, the Regional Stakeholders Group will essentially end at this next meeting, so then your feedback goes to the Marine Life Protection Act and or people in the initiative staff. So you don't need to support. I do appreciate what you said in support of this, but I don't need that kind of action tonight.
Okay. Gene?
Rick, in package number one, you mentioned that there would be no commercial fishing in Morro Bay in the harbor itself, and mariculture would be limited to the existing mariculture. I would recommend that you include
are listed as either SMR or SMCA or SMP. Are the same regulations applied to each of the areas, or do each of the areas have a special need and set of regulations?
Each has a set of regulations, to use your terminology. It's different zoning. Yes.
So all of the SMRs, if you approve an SMR in one area, could have a different set of regulations further down the coast in that same SMR.
Right.
So looking at the crosshatches here doesn't mean that the regulations are all going to be the same. Okay. Okay. So we don't really know what any of the regulations are in any, right, in any of these little cross-hatched areas. It's just under the different jurisdictions. So mm-hmm. I think that's very important to realize.
Yeah. Additional comments?
I think that, Rick's comments about making the public more aware are really important. You know, Gene alluded to it when in a question. People, for the most part, are going to find out about this after the sign is up saying, thou shalt not. And participation sooner rather than later is probably important.
Okay. Rick has indicated that he really does not need a vote or a motion or anything else like that. What he's looking for is both our inputs to him as well as our inputs to the MLPA and to the general public, and to request that. This would be available.
If they go to the MLPA website, there is a specific tab on that for public comment.
Okay.
And anybody that submits a comment, it gets logged.
Okay, so they could Google MLPA.
Yes.
And get on there.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else?
And I'll quickly read off the local stakeholders, if you don't mind, in case folks,
go ahead,
anybody
please.
Knows them. Myself, Tom Capen of Port San Luis, Don Canestro up at Cambria area on the Norris Rancho, Jeremiah O'Brien and his wife Trudy, Jay Elders, the alternate down in Port San Luis. Eric Endersby is serving on this. I have to make a note. He's decided to do this on personal time because he wanted to represent recreational fishing spear fishermen. So he has essentially taken a lot of his time off, even though he works for me as a chief harbor patrol officer. Eric is representing diving, recreational fishing, and spear fishing. Ray Fields up at the Abalone Farm. Tom Hafer. Tom has been incredible, putting an amazing amount of work in this, and he's really just done a wonderful job. Gordon Hensley, a coast keeper in San Luis Obispo, Ron Massengill up in Cambria area, and Marla Marisi, Tom Moylan's an alternate down at the Port San Luis Marine Institute, Darby Neal and the recreational fishing.
Okay. With that, I think we'll close that action item unless somebody. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Rick for inviting me and nominating me for this, too. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, moving on. I think maybe a 5-minute break, real quick. I need some water. What do we have? We need Ed. We need Jim.
Jim. He's standing there, right?
Is Jim or Ed back there?
He doesn't trust me.
Thank you.
I think Ed's outside.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Oh, yeah. And I looked at. Okay, we're back to business. The action item number 4-2, mid-year budget review. Actually, we have to be a little bit careful on this one because, in fact, the budget is the bailiwick of the harbor director. That's his department. And what our job is to look at these, give him feedback. Also, if you wanted to say you think that such and such should be up there, that's one thing. But it still is Rick's responsibility, and I don't think we want to go into this thing thinking that we set the budget for the harbor. So with that, I'll let Rick.
Maybe I'll start it out with some good news that we did receive. The city received $283,000 in payment of the outfall lease rent for up to the period of December 31 this year. We anticipate on January 1 or there, shortly thereafter, we'll receive $250,000 additional funds that should all go to the Harbor Fund.
Good.
Yes. So that, and that, what I provided you is a report here. What the process I'm looking at is that we've adopted a budget for this year. It did not include those revenues. They were not included in the budget. Now, we should at least consider appropriating some of those funds on matching revenues with expenses at the mid-year budget, which is tentatively scheduled for a second meeting in January at the City Council. So I've listed here the most current, number two is seafood processing plant, dredging harbor, miscellaneous dock and revetment repairs. I mean, those first two are good examples of, it would be wonderful in my mind to work on things like that and a new office, but those are, unfortunately, we got some catch up to do. We've been deferring a lot of expenses for the last 3 years for a number of reasons. And so this list is really made up of things of, the number one is to pay back a loan to the general fund. Number two is this North T-Pier repair project that we identified 3 or 4 years ago with our maintenance inspection. And we funded 1 year and then had to pull the funding out because we didn't have money. So another big chunk of money would go to fully funding that repair project on the North T-Pier. We do have a really important office need. Most of you have been in the office, and we're just overwhelmed with tasks these days. Without saying more, I don't know what to say, but I don't know how the government works sometimes these days. There's just too many new issues and priorities, and this Marine Life Protection Act's a good example, and all the external training and professional development issues you have. Anyway, we need some additional office staff, and we've got a half-time position we could take to full-time. There's a potential annual recurring costs identified there. Got some grant opportunity for some equipment that totals about $70,000, and we can get 35% of it granted, we think, through a first responder grant. Frankly, that's going to be a pretty high priority for us if we can get that grant. That's good leverage. Those are listed there. Sue always reminds me we need to replace our software, our specialized harbor billing software. We've needed to do this for a number of years because there's some risk because of, like, your input, and we'll try to do the best we can.
Okay, I'm going to start down with Rick and feedback or questions.
On number seven, the percentage of gross sales audits, what's the frequency?
I already got asked that question, I guess.
Okay. What's the frequency of how many you normally do, and is it annual or every 2 or 3 years?
We have a lease management policy, and in that policy we say we will audit, I believe, every 3 years. Of our 40 leases, there's only about probably 6, 7, maybe 8 that are not percentage of gross sales anymore. The vast majority now are the modern format or one shape of the modern format with percentage of gross sales rent. And we're supposed to be auditing those every 3 years. I think we've missed a year, and we may be going on even a second year because we simply had to defer that expense. And we felt like that was, you know, less important than, say, keeping, you know, whatever. I don't use an analogy. But anyway, in the overall, when we came time to budget, we just simply didn't have that, so we deferred that. But to keep as close back, get back into compliance, we should be starting those. Typically what we've done with that, the costs have gone up in part because we have more percentage of gross sales leases. I think the average cost was $800 per lease. Yeah, about $800 per lease. So it's a relatively cursory review by a person who's experienced in this, an outside auditor. If there's additional problems, then oftentimes it gets more expensive. but there also problems can eventually also result in us being able to share some of those costs with the tenant. So it's hard to say exactly.
Increasing the staff time. Are there any other items here that would be recurring perpetual amounts?
Seven kind of, yeah, and otherwise I don't think so. I tried to leave those out. I mean, those really are kind of apples and oranges. You picked that out correctly, I just wanted to put that in to let you know that's a real high priority with us. Right. And those get a different kind of review, too, when I go up to City Hall. Also, they you know, and rightly so, any proposal for an annual ongoing cost such as that should be we should have to prove that we have good, solid revenues to support that into the future years.
Yeah, when you go before the city, chances are they'll probably want, number one, the fund payback, so it'll be the balance of the funds will be
limited. You don't think I'm going to get any arguments
limited.
With that. Yeah, I got a couple questions here. On the North Teapier project, the capital project for rehabilitation, does that include driving some pilings? Wouldn't that cost?
Yes, I think we had Carson Porter, Craig. Anyway, the professional dive survey done, and I think it was 12 or 14 piles that needed to be replaced. And one of the problems has been sitting on the shelf for a long time now.
Yeah,
so obviously I've got
better.
Materials cost increase. I may have to take another look at everything. I'm not sure what the actual estimate is going to be at this point.
Then I noticed on number 9, dock repair project and gangway. Is that just for the floats and several gangways? Or
yeah, I wanted to replace all those old wooden gangways should be replaced. And this is sort of a rough estimate. I really want to get on that program again.
It's pretty reasonable. One other thing is number 11. Now, that kind of sounds a little strange to me, Rick. I don't know. $12,000 for a cart. I'll make you one for half that cost.
Yeah. What we've had there is, we've had a wonderful service, I think, for the city. Mm-hmm. For years and years, I had people tell me, public and even council members, very unhappy with the amount of trash on the waterfront, despite the fact that we have a tremendous amount of volunteers here. I mean, that volunteer are just amazing. Early in the morning, I see the same people. They never get any thanks or credit or ask for it. They're always cleaning up. And yet it's too much, and the biggest problem was that Sunday trash service was not feasible most times. And so you get trash cans being filled up on busy summer weekends. Roger knows this well. The birds and this people spread the trash, and it's a big, big mess. And so we found a temporary employee, a really unique individual. For years I tried to find somebody and never could get anybody who was reliable. We found a temporary individual for the last year and a half that's taken that on, and he comes in on Saturdays and Sundays, and he empties out the trash cans, and it's made a big difference. I mean, it's just made a big difference. There's no other way to put it, and it's relatively low cost for the city, and he tells me he really would be more efficient if he had a little maintenance cart, and so, gosh, I'd just try and do anything for old Louie if I could.
So he wants a golf cart, in other words.
I don't know. $12,000, I mean, I've seen these kind of vehicles. I'm told that they probably can be had for less, and I really am investigated, but I thought I'd put it in there. It would be a good little tool to have for that kind of use if we're going to continue the service. And it's probably not it's kind of an add-on. I mean, certainly one that's well worth the money, in my opinion. But
people just stack stuff on top. And we actually got a key to open those things up at our place, and we'd send our employees out on Sunday morning to dump it in our dumpster because we had room for it. Now that we're closed, we can't do that anymore, so... you know, it really is unfortunate that there's no Sunday pickup, and this service is really an important one. So I hope there's a way to encourage him and keep him going, but I agree, you know, that I'd like to see what $12,000 buys, I guess. And I didn't mean to cut you off, Ed, but before we got off that item, I
was looking at an electric car with lots of room for garbage on it for about $8,000, one of those little carts, you know. So I don't, $12,000 sounds a little expensive, but I guess they'll do what they find out for themselves.
Okay. Jim? Jane?
I noticed, Rick, that only one item from our wish list is more or less addressed, miscellaneous docks and revetment repairs. Is it possible to try to fund a little bit more money to some of their other priorities? That's just be my only comment.
I'm going to be a little defensive there. And, you know, the State Park Marina is ongoing. So I think we're doing that one. The boat repair yard, yeah, I'm frustrated with that. Dredging in the harbor, I think we do a pretty good job with that. So far we've been lucky with ACOE, and then we did do the maintenance of the mooring area. So I kind of see that as a maybe a not. The public restroom and seafood processing plant, I think we've discussed before that we do have an area we've sort of designated to replace that public restroom in the North T Pier and do Buck restroom. But there's a beautiful new restroom at Morrow Rock with grant funds.
Okay, and then and perhaps you may want to, you know, put a few dollars in a can to keep for a rainy day somehow.
Yeah, never again. I agree.
I just wondered why you didn't have anything in the budget for the Harbor Advisory Board Retirement Fund.
Yeah, or the the conferences in Aruba.
Yeah, that's it.
One more.
Go ahead.
Rick, I just quickly added all these up, and it's just under $500,000, I believe, and that's not including, you know, hopefully getting a rebate on the grant. That's your first 2 years and a little change. I would hope that on that list of things before it gets away that the Coast Guard Harbor Office Joint Facility, you know, is there any chance of revitalizing that?
Yes, I think we're going to have the Coast Guard is interested again. And we have been saying that we don't, until this Duke revenue issue is solved, we can't see proceeding with something like that. Now that's resolved, we've tentatively scheduled a meeting with the City Council on February 13th, I believe is the date, with the Coast Guard will be present, and we're going to see if the City Council would like to revive it and proceed. I believe it's a pretty good project. It's going to be very expensive. It's going to require borrowing a very large amount of money, and we could probably do that with these Duke revenues, but, of course, one of the things that we really didn't see 4 years ago was that the Duke revenues at this point in this agreement may not be totally secure.
I don't think the Coast Guard's going to be in there.
Yeah, they'll reimburse us.
They get the architect to work the pencil off, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing, too, for the short term, you do have that Duke income. For the long term, it's not as certain, and that's why I think to get it moving again sooner rather than later and build a 50-year home. If it's not done now with this extra input of funds, while it is a certainty, it'll never happen.
I don't want to jump ahead to your future agenda items, but perhaps your February meeting should be the presentation that we're, you know, a preview of the presentation that we made to Council on February 13th, and you could potentially make another. I think you're on record with a recommendation on that, but you could update it if you'd like.
Okay. Any other questions? Input? Feedback? Very well. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Moving on. Item 4-3, cancellation of the January 5th, 2006 meeting.
I move that we cancel the January 5th, 2006 meeting.
I'll second it.
And you so wanted to be there.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passed unanimously. Very well. Moving on. Information items. Harbor Department status report.
Okay, before I get into the newsletter, I wanted to point out I handed out these Coast and Ocean magazines to everybody on the board. We do have these available in our office of the issues that are problems for our fishermen. And it's interesting, and there's some good photographs as well. So I think this is an interesting read. There's a couple of interesting articles in it as well. So again, if people are interested, we do have several at our office available as well. And newsletter, I'll just go over some of this stuff we've already discussed. We did get good news that funding for our dredging has been pretty much secured. It does still need the president's signature, and, you know, as we know, things can change. The budget there is worse than our budget here, so we don't know for sure, but it's looking pretty good. And Congresswoman Capps has done a really good job in trying to keep our funding for the dredging, which is critical for our harbor, as everyone knows. Grant opportunities, the Central California Joint Cables Fisheries Liaison Committee has grant openings right now. I don't know if Ed wants to add anything to this. Proposals are being accepted. They started accepting them in November 15th and will continue through January 15th. There will be a workshop on December 7th at 10 a.m. at 525 Harbor Street, which is the liaison offices, and they'll explain the proposal formats and what you have to do to get your proposal looked at. So if you're interested, that's an important meeting to go to make sure you know how to get your proposal in. Then hearings on the projects will be held January 25th in the Morro Bay Public Library meeting room, 12:30 to 5 o'clock on January 25th. People who have put in projects for review will have a chance to present them. And then the next day, on January 26th, the projects will be either approved or denied, and that, again, is a public meeting at the gate. Office hours, 9 a.m. to 1:30, Monday through Thursday, and the email is fiberfish@thegrid.net. These grants are a really good opportunity for our local fishermen and anyone in the area of fishermen. It doesn't have to be just Morro Bay. If you have good ideas of things that will help the industry here, put in for a grant. It's a good opportunity. As Jean mentioned at the last meeting, it is winter storm time, and it looks like tonight we might get our first one with some nasty winds from the south. It seems to be holding off a bit, but we always remind people, check your lines, tighten things up, put extra lines on. And another thing I think is really important to do is after that first big storm that we have, come down and take a look, because you might be surprised. You might need to put another line on before the next one, because you think you have everything really tight and secure, and after that first storm comes through, things may look a lot different. So it's always good to come down and check afterwards. Light a boat parade. It's coming right up. It is on Saturday. So this year, there's a lot less money involved, so it might be a smaller function, but we're hoping a lot of boats and people turn out. It's really something that starts off our holiday season. There is no entry fees. They are gratefully accepting donations. The Chamber of Commerce is pretty much handling all the logistics with help from the Harbor Department and the Coast Guard. And you can contact Amy at the Chamber of Commerce for more info, 772-4467. Commercial slip qualifications, that's something we do every year, and the fishermen have been notified, and we're already getting a lot. K-38, and she's pretty much world-renowned. She does a lot of training throughout the world, and people came from places throughout the world. People came from Canada, Portugal, Italy, and Australia to attend this, and there was a lot of training going on. They did tow boating safety and a safety summit that focused on flood water rescue. They actually, Sean Eladio and some of her crew were actually in the follow-up of the Katrina cleanup, so they had a lot of rescue efforts that they were involved in there. And an open water rescue course was also held. So yeah, this is the second time we've had that here, and we hope to have some of them in the future as well. And we've had some of our people attend them, and they're really a good opportunity. We've kind of already gone through the Back Bay mooring issue, so I don't know how much more detail you would like on that, but a couple things. Following the council meeting, our mayor wrote a letter to DFG requesting that they allow moorings to stay longer. They got that letter back. That's attached here. And Fish and Game said very clearly that right now they do not want to have any vessels in their wildlife area at all, whether it's managed by us, by them, by anybody. They made that very clear. Our board looked at this issue at our November meeting, and the memo that we forwarded to council, including the motions that were made at that meeting, is also attached for your information. There was a meeting on the November 15th in the NEP offices with DFG and concerned boaters. People from Harbor and Coast Guard were there as well, and director. Like I said, several of those have already been granted. So This year is going to be the 10th annual Winter Bird Festival, and it takes place on the 13th through the 16th, supported by a lot of local groups, and they have all-day and half-day tours, and they include all kinds of different habitats. People can go bird watching, and there's workshops. It's a great festival. A lot of good things are going on. And for information, you can contact the Chamber of Commerce, and they actually have their own website, which is www.morrowbaybirdfestival.org. And it's a great website. It has sign-up forms, and it has a list of all the different speakers they're having and all the different events they'll be having during that time. It's a very good website. And Sunday is our holiday tree lighting in the downtown park. That starts 4:30 to 6:30. And if you want more information on that, you can contact Parks and Rec. The National Estuary Program has grant deadlines December 2nd and March 3rd for mini grants. And for bigger restoration grants, that's December 2nd and June 2nd. One note on the City Council for future agenda items. The public hearing on circulation and partial one-way circulation on the Embarcadero and proposed parking regulation, all those parking issues, instead of being on tentatively for December, it looks like those are now on tentatively for January 9. And those will be kind of interesting. They're covering a lot of different things, and we are going to try to put out a notice in our billing so that all the leaseholders...
So. Next one is additional comments. Anybody have additional comments? Rick.
Let's see. The position, my position as member at large and Gene's position for the Los Osos Baywood, our terms are both up next month. So I just wanted to make, you know, announce that to the public so anyone listening realize that between now and the next time that we meet in February, I'm sure the city is going to be doing their general announcement in December that there are two positions available on the Harbor Advisory Board.
Okay.
At least according to this last draft that I saw.
Okay. Any additional comments? No? Future agenda items. We'll think of something. Okay.
Yeah, the Coast Guard Harbor Patrol office building. I think that probably will take some time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very well. Last item, adjournment. All in favor?
Aye.
It's done. Thank you very much, people.